Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Well, it's time for the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it is Friday, April 5th, 2024. Before I bring my distinguished guests on, I just feel as though I just have to address an issue. We have freaking lost our minds in America. That is clear. That is a constant theme in the Ben Jarofsky Show. Madness in America and our political system. And it affects both parties as we head toward the November election. Probably going to talk a little bit about the madness. With this particular guest, we talk a lot about the madness on the Democratic side and how it impacts the Democrat. We're going to talk a little bit about madness in MAGA world and how it impacts the Republican Senate seat. But I just had to get this one. This literally, I was reading our distinguished guest's latest article. And then shortly thereafter, I got it. Two appeals from lefties in email. And one appeal, follow me on this, ladies and gentlemen, was for Justice Sotomayor to step down. Apparently, I don't know, people are worried about her health, her age, so she should step down now so President Joe Biden can quickly name a successor and the Democratic-controlled Senate can vote on it before November's election. The second appeal I got was from pretty much the same type of lefty saying, don't vote for Biden because of Gaza. I'm like, do you know how schizo your message is, lefties? It's just lefties. Pause. Take a breath. Look at what you're, think about what you're saying. You're saying on one hand that Sotomayor should step down now so President Biden can find a suitable replacement for her to get it through the Senate before November's presidential election, where Donald Trump will defeat Joe Biden, largely because you're urging people not to vote for Joe Biden. That's insane. I'm just telling you, I know what's going on in Gaza is heartbreaking. I know it is criminal. I know it is utter madness. But wait, I can't even get the words out. Just think about the illogic embedded in you urging, hurry up, Joe Biden, and nominate a successor to Sotomayor so we have her in plaid replacement when we don't vote for you. And allow Donald Trump to win so he could just name, I don't know, how many more justices will cling to the three that we have? Oh, lefties. Oh, my beloved lefties. All right. Without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest. I had to do that distinguished guest because it came literally about a half an hour before. I don't know if you're getting the same emails I get, but wow. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself and we'll take it away. Go ahead.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be here. I'm David Ferris, Associate Professor of Political Science at Roosevelt University, author of It's Time to Fight Dirty, How Democrats Can Build a Lasting Majority in American Politics, contributing writer at Slate, Newsweek, and a proud recipient of every panicked email from every Democrat in the country. So don't worry. I got like 400 text messages a day that are like, it's all over, David. All is lost. The Titanic is at the bottom of the ocean. You know, it's like, okay, I get it. I understand this is what you have to do to get me to open a text message, but it's not.
No. <you're... laughs> All right. Well, yes, it's true. I will say this. I've been closely following the machinations of President Biden as he tries to figure out a position to take with Israel and Gaza. We're going to get into the Senate race, which is what I want to talk about, MAGA madness. But and I must say, as frustrating as it is, as horrific as the ongoing slaughter in Gaza is, and the potential for starvation, that's just horrific. I just, lefties, take solace in this. Like, your resistance on this issue has forced a change. And I understand it's like a glacier moving, but it is a change. And the notion that a president of the United States would call Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel and say, our aid would be contingent on what you do in Gaza, which is what apparently Biden said in a phone call the other day, David, is a significant change in American foreign policy, even if it's coming very slowly and not really helping anybody on the ground in Gaza. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you can tell that the ground is shifting a little bit when you have these kind of like pretty normie Democrats like Richard Blumenthal in the Senate from Connecticut, and there was Chris Coons, and people who are not known for their progressive daring, shall we say. Who are starting to really be openly critical of what the Israeli government is doing in Gaza right now, it's taken too long. It's too many people have died in the interim. It's like mind blowing to me still that a pivot hasn't happened earlier and sharper. But the pressure is being felt. I think. Some of the message that's being sent, even in these primaries where people are voting uncommitted or not voting for Biden, I think that's starting to reach the White House. It's not enough, and I think you got to keep the pressure up. But certainly sitting at home in November and letting Donald Trump win the election is not going to help anyone in Gaza. Nor is it going to lead to a long-term change in the Democratic Party. Like, I don't think that's how we're going to get things done either. Because inevitably, when we lose an election, Ben, it gets blamed on progressives. So, you know what I mean? They're going to be like, it was George Floyd. It was Gaza. It was, you know, it's like, it's just, you know, they already got the fingers pointed at us. You know, it's like, it's the EVs. It's, you know, they've got a whole narrative ready to roll about how like anything that Biden did that was remotely progressive or leftist is why he lost. And so you can't even count on like, okay, so are we going to sabotage Biden? We're going to lose the election. Trump will become president, but you know, the politics will turn sharply towards us. It's like, no, probably not. You know, I don't think that's what's going to happen. So just going back to the Sotomayor thing, it's like, I mean, obviously she should step aside, right? I mean, like the fact that she's still on the court means the Democrats still have not really grasped the reality of strategic retirements. And like the fact that, let's say Biden wins, but we lose the Senate. We're not getting any Supreme Court justices in that situation, right? They've all but said that multiple times, that they won't let us have a pick if we don't have the Senate. They'll just change the rules again. So that messaging is like, so you want Sotomayor to step aside so her replacement can get outvoted 6-3 for the rest of their natural life. You know, it's like, no, have Sotomayor step aside, appoint a baby to that position, just a little progressive baby that'll be there for 70 years. And then win. And then you might have a chance to replace a couple of the older conservatives if things bounce right for us. You know, it's no guarantee, but I mean, people do get old and die eventually. So, yeah, it, the inability to do that, like strategic long range thinking, you know, the sense that like, well, you know, we can clarify the contradictions a little bit in November. This is the same thing people said in 2016 when we lost. And they were like, well, maybe it won't be that bad. Like, maybe it'll like turbocharge the progressive movement, blah, 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 blah. And we've ever since 2016, we've had this like nightmare Supreme Court, like lording it over us, taking away one right at a time. And I don't think overall, in the larger scheme of things, it was remotely good that Trump won that election. Okay. And it's not going to be any better this time. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't want to go down the path of 2016 again, and I'm going to move forward. But I must say there would have been a whole different set of problems had Hillary Clinton won, no doubt. So I'm not saying we'd be in Nirvana land if she had been victorious in 2016, but you're absolutely correct. I can't. Just the same thing with 2000. When I think about George Bush beating Al Gore, I can't see. I know there was a similar argument was raised then. I heard from lefties, progressives, whatever they're called. I actually call them lefties, not progressives, because there's a difference. Progressives are the new liberals, because liberals are ashamed to be called liberals, like call themselves progressives. They're going to wait until the Republicans brainwash them on the word progressive, and then they'll find another word because they're so self-hating and they believe everything Fox says about them. Your point's well taken. All right, let's move to MAGA craziness. Before I'm making a note of this, I would, before we leave, I want you to talk about the effort in Nebraska. I just saw a story about this to change the electoral college system, which just has me shaking my head. The difference between Republicans totally play to win. I don't know what Democrats are doing. Should have changed the electoral college system in 2000, Dems. Should have read David Ferris's book. He told you to do it, and you didn't listen to him. And now Republicans are already... Oh, Lord, David. Anyway, we'll get to that. That's a tease, all right? That's just so I don't forget. Let's hope you don't forget. You wrote for once, optimistic, vaguely optimistic column in Newsweek regarding the Democrats' chance is to keep hold of the Senate in the face of like, what would could be viewed as impossible odds. I mean, just the obstacles they're facing in the Senate map are huge. Any quote logical person who has no, just is looking at it as strictly a game that you bet on would bet on the Republicans. And yet the Republicans, this is their insanity, are perpetually nominating wackos, MAGA lunatics who are really testing the country's tolerance for this kind of politics. And you begin by talking about the Republican Senate nominee in Ohio who may give the Democrats an opportunity to win in that state, a key state. So why don't you just sort of address this issue in the most general way, and then we'll get into the specifics. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so as you know, a third of the Senate gets elected every 2 years, right? And so that means the precise mix of seats and states that are up can vary pretty dramatically from cycle to cycle. So there are good maps for Democrats and there are bad maps for Democrats. This is the 2018 map because it's up every 6 years, right? This is like a nightmare map for Democrats. This is the map in which we won a 9-point popular vote victory in the House in 2018, but still managed to lose two seats in the Senate. Because of the precise mix of states that were up for election that year. And it just so happens that we're defending like double the number of seats that Republicans are defending, and we're doing so in very difficult places. So we have incumbent Democrats in Montana, Arizona, Nevada, a bunch of blue-leaning swing states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. There's a seat up in Ohio. Plus...
And I was like, how could this get any worse? We're automatically losing a seat. When our friend, my friend and yours, Ben, Joseph Manchin, decided to retire rather than defending his seat in West Virginia. So we have a 51 seat majority in the Senate. You can just go ahead and take us to the baseline is 50, right? Like, the Republican in that race is going to be Jim Justice, who's a popular governor, is going to win that by 40 points. And, you know, Joe Manchin is literally, I don't use the word literally lightly. Okay. But he's literally the only Democrat in West Virginia that could win that seat. Okay. And he's gone. So that seat is lost forever. And so that is just a tough road to hoe, right? Like, we've got the pickup opportunities for Democrats this cycle are Florida and Texas, right? Which would probably only be plausible in a Democratic wave year. And just to be honest, this doesn't look like a Democratic wave year, okay? So we've really got our work cut out for us. If there's even a modest Republican wave or we do badly, Republicans could have a 54 or 55 seat majority in the Senate pretty easily. So now we happen to have strong incumbents in Ohio with Sherrod Brown, in Wisconsin with Tammy Baldwin. I think the race in Arizona probably leans our way. And the reason that it leans our way is because Republican primary voters, in their infinite wisdom, Ben, are going to nominate Carrie Lake, as one person called her, the Empress of Trollistan, who lost the gubernatorial election to like a walking piece of cardboard named Katie Hobbs, and just ran a terrible race, is a complete lunatic. And they're just like, she lost the government, you know, she lost the gubernatorial election that she really should have won given the environment in 2022. And Republican primary, they just can't quit her.
You're talking Arizona. You misspoke. You said Nevada. You meant Arizona is primary.
Yeah. So Carrie Lake in Arizona, they might nominate a crazy person in Nevada named Jim Marchant. It's unclear. But the bigger picture here is that Republican candidate choice has been costing them in election after election after election for the last like 16 years. I actually date it back to 2008 with Sarah Palin. I think Sarah Palin was like MAGA before there was MAGA. She speaks this like really like weird hostile lingo that's very hostile to urban America. And she was like the perfect pre-MAGA MAGA, right? Like, she was like dumb as a pile of bricks, overconfident, very weird, with like very weird sort of personal dynamics in her life, with a lot of sort of extremist beliefs combined with an almost galactic ignorance about how anything in the world works. And so when you take those things together, you have these like conspiracy nuts who don't know anything, who are anti-democratic, pro-insurrection, you know, like anti-vaccine, like this kind of stuff, right? These kind of candidates have been costing Republican Senate elections for a long time. Palin, of course, was a vice presidential candidate, but there's a scholarship to show that she cost John McCain 2% of the vote in the 2008 election just by herself. There's Christine O'Donnell in Delaware in 2010. Remember this person? She was the witch.
The witch. Mm-hmm.
There was I get the two guys mixed up, but Todd Akin in Missouri, I think, was the guy that was like, if it's a legitimate rape, you know, like you had multiple consecutive Senate candidates in 2012, 2014 make remarks about rape that were beyond the pale, even for Republicans. Lost very winnable elections there. And then there was 2022, where you had people like Blake Masters in Arizona, in the Senate race there, Tudor Dixon, the Michigan gubernatorial candidate. They just like over and over and over again, Republican primary voters just pick these like very unpalatable people to advance to the general election. And it really seems to cost them. Like Democrats did not really have a good year in 2022. Outside of like coming a bit closer in the House than expected. I think if Republicans had ran kind of normie candidates in more of these Senate and governor races, they would have done much better and possibly have taken the Senate. And so when you look at this terrible map for us, you look at our chances of holding the Senate, which are not great. I'm not gonna lie to you. They're not great. But they got a little better when Republicans in Ohio nominated this guy, Bernie Moreno, who's like a car dealer, you know, like a MAGA car dealer, who, you know, just imagine all of the like dumb MAGA things that you could say. And he's right there with him. So our only, I think our real only shot at holding the Senate is that Republicans nominate enough weirdos that they lose these close races and we hang on with like maybe a 50-50 Senate. That's, I think a 50-50 Senate, to be honest with you, is like the top of the mountain for us. But at least it would be a 50-50 Senate without Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. So there, that's something that we rejoice about.
Well, okay. So let me think through exactly what the issue is here. We start with Palin. Whenever the Republicans go right, further right, they drag the center with them to a certain degree. So, yes, Sarah, there was no candidate on like Sarah Palin before Palin. It's a prominent position is what I'm trying to say. And now we see many Sarah Palins all over the place, including Donald Trump is learning from Sarah Palin, if you follow what I'm saying. So what was extreme in 2008 is becoming the norm. And so that's one thing to be said for the Republican strategy, if there is such a thing. We're just going to keep going. We're not going to apologize. We're going to be offensive. We don't care. You talk about rape being the norm, like Todd Akin going too far beyond the pale for Republicans in 2000, I think it was 2010 in Missouri. They have a man who has been convicted of sexual assault in a trial in New York. Okay, a civil trial, not a criminal trial, I understand, Eugene Carroll's trial, at the head of their ticket. So they've gone, Todd Akin, now is his time, if you follow what I'm saying, David. So as they just keep pushing it further and further right. And so if Moreno wins in Ohio, all bets are off. Do you follow me? Like the line has been crossed. The only resistance I could see, strong resistance, and we've talked about this many times, but it's becoming more and more obvious, is the issue of abortion rights. And I see MAGA slowly trying to figure this one out. You know, they don't know what to do with this. We could talk about what's happening in Florida a little bit, where all of a sudden you talk Florida's in play. Like you said, well, we have to reverse the Florida Senate. That's right now the senator is a guy named Scott, I believe, who's up for re-election. I don't even know who the Democratic candidate is. I don't even know if they have a candidate yet. That's how little I've been following Florida's Senate race. But the point is, abortion could be the issue, David, that flips Florida for the Democrats. Democrats are even talking about winning Florida. Biden versus Trump because of abortion. That's how bizarre the world is right now. Do you follow me? Like the Republicans have pushed it so far to the right. Everything's acceptable, but abortion. That's how I see it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, sure. We do have a candidate in Florida. I know because I'm on literally every candidate list like in the entire country. Her name is Deborah Mercastle Powell, I think. She seems reasonable. Like she seems like a reasonable candidate. And I would not have put this on the radar prior to last week, but yeah, there's a sort of up or down abortion rights referendum on the ballot in Florida that could be a real game changer. I mean, the chief obstacle to that is the Florida Democratic Party still remains like just a gigantic mess. Like they canceled the primary, and it turns out like if you had registered for the primary, you would have gotten a mail ballot for November. Blah blah blah. Like so, there's just Florida Democrats just keep making these like one or unforced error after another. But I think our Senate candidate is fine. In a situation where you're going to have significant mass mobilization to win this referendum, that's not going to do it on its own, right? But like if they can put Rick Scott in a corner on this, you know, like Rick Scott's going to have to decide where he stands. on abortion, right? Does he support the party's like de facto sort of national ban stance? Does he support the ban that Ron DeSantis signed? You know, whatever it is, it's not popular. Okay. And so the Roe and Dobbs and abortion, it's like this big structural issue that has been causing Republicans real problems since the moment the Dobbs decision was issued. And this is our first presidential election with it, right? And so we don't know. Is Dobbs, is abortion rights, is that going to be enough for people to come out, vote for the referendum, you know, to enshrine abortion rights in the state constitution and vote for Democrats at a federal level, like after they just reelected Ron DeSantis by like 20 points? I don't know. You know, I mean, I've written that I think 2022 was a kind of a fluke year for Florida Democrats and looked worse than it actually was. Nevertheless, Florida is clearly a red-leaning state. It's an uphill battle. But I do think that this referendum is going to force, if nothing else, going to force Republicans to spend like a ton of money there. And Rick Scott's terrible. I mean, he doesn't get as much attention as some of the others, but he's like just a void of charisma, just a lifelong vulture, you know, in his career in the private sector, like, you know, looted money from nursing homes and stuff. Just a real piece of garbage, you know, that I still can't believe that we lost to him in the first place. Thanks, Bill Nelson. But we did. And so, yeah, Republicans are on defense about this. Trump is on defense about it, right? Like he's in this awkward position of like, yeah, I did everything you wanted. I gave you these Supreme Court justices. Oh, wait, what did they do?
Oh. No, it's true.
But he was like, but I just did what the Federalist Society told me to do. Like, because I don't care about any of this stuff. And so, you know, he's giving these weird interviews where he's like, I think it should be left to the states, right? But like, if you want to ban it, it's fine. It's up to you. It's up to the states. But I kind of, I'll sign an abortion ban, like whatever, you know, like, because he doesn't know what he's saying from one minute to the next. He's fundamentally an incoherent person. But yeah, this is obviously, it's like a huge political problem for Republicans. It's something Democrats need to try to keep the focus on and could be a difference maker in the Senate. This is a, you know, again, this is the toughest Senate map that we're going to see. And we need all the help that we can get. A referendum in Florida is good, obviously, for reproductive rights. It's good for the Democrats in the Senate. And then we need, you know, frankly, we need Republicans to pick their worst candidate in all these races. And they haven't done it in all the races, right? Like Steve Daines, who runs the National Republican Senate Campaign Committee, he's the other senator from Montana, has been trying to get the right thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like negotiating with a toddler at bedtime, you know? I'll read you one more book, Donald. I will read you one more book. Just drink your milk. So he got Trump to get out of the way in like Pennsylvania, you know, and he leaned on Republicans in that state. What's the name of the guy that ran for governor in 2022 in Pennsylvania? Just a real lunatic, you know, came straight out of the Republican legislature there and got 15 points.
Mastriani.
Mastriani.
I can't believe I got that one. Yeah.
So they got Doug Mastriani to get out of the race so that they could have Dave McCormick, who's like a more mainstream candidate. The problem is that like what counts as mainstream these days for Republicans is very different than what it was 10 years ago, right? 10 years ago, the weirdos who couldn't keep their mouth shut about rape were like the insurgent outsiders who were an irritant to the leadership. And the leadership has largely been conquered by MAGA, right? So what you're seeing is like Danes trying to exert this pragmatic impulse within the context of MAGA, right? It's like, okay, we're going to be pragmatic extremists, right? Like there are no more pragmatists left in the party, really, right? Like Susan Collins, I guess, so she's like kind of alone, and Murkowski, who's not really in the party anymore either. And so the ones that they're like, if you read about this, I've seen some stories that were like, actually, Republicans have done a pretty good job, like keeping the MAGA people out of the primaries. And then you look at the people that they're touting, and it's like, I don't know how to say this guy's name because I don't watch TV, but Eric Hovde in Wisconsin is the Republican, you know, the leading Republican Senate candidate there to challenge Tammy Baldwin. He literally does not live in Wisconsin. That he's like a California banker with a mansion in Malibu. And the Wisconsin Democratic Party is just having a field day with this guy, you know. You know, They're like, this is the best. The Republicans have nominated the very best candidate that California has to offer. Ben Wickler, who used to run Move On, runs the Wisconsin Democrats. And that is like a top tier state Democratic Party. They have done a lot with a little. And have run out a string of victories in a state that was really rigged against them in a variety of important ways. And they've just been killing it. Because take my money, man, find somebody as smart as Ben Wickler to take over Wisconsin and send Ben Wickler to Florida. Okay. Are you listening, Ben?
Yeah. He's a big listener to the show. Yeah. Go ahead.
And please go take over the Florida Dems. So, anyway, the Republicans have the same problem this year, right? We have two crazy people already in important races, right? You've got Arizona and you got Ohio. And there's still a bunch of primaries to come. So, if they cannot get their MAGA pragmatics into place in enough races, they really could blow this. And this would be like blowing like a 21 point lead in the fourth quarter. Am I correct? Is that how football works? Four quarters, right?
21. Yes. Very good. Your knowledge of sports is astounding. All right. So let's just pause and reflect about how successful the Republicans have been for a moment. And my belief, I read your immigration article, which probably be a whole show. So that's just one example of how Republicans has successfully brainwashed America. And across the, this should be a Democratic year. It shouldn't even be an issue. Like, this should be a Democratic sweep. Republicans should be running. They should be moving left, trying to fit. The economy is so strong right now, as I speak, the stock market is so strong right now. Under normal circumstances that govern the political universe that I grew up with, that you grew up with, even though there's a big age difference between us, this would be a Democratic year. The Republicans have so successfully, thanks to Fox, brainwashed America, including Chicago. Chicagoans are no different. That it's like up in the air whether Joe Biden will get elected. You got the lunatics running, MAGA lunatics running across the in states like Arizona and Ohio. It's up in the air whether maybe we need abortion. It's because they moved so far to the extreme on abortion that may save Democrats. So I just want to I have to say this. They've been successful. The Sarah Palin nomination as vice president worked in terms of normalizing madness. And that's the reality that your kids and my grandkids will grow up with, which is a frightening thought. Not to get all gloomy and doomy in the show that was supposed to be optimistic. do you hear me? Your kids are going to grow up in a world where Sarah Palin is the norm. And even if she literally is not on a ballot. And I feel that's a propaganda achievement by the Republicans. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, McCain realized this, right? I mean, towards the end of his life, like when they interviewed McCain about 2008, he took some responsibility for it. You know, he was like, yeah, that was a mistake. You know, he wanted to run with Joe Lieberman. And he came under enormous pressure from the far right to pick a candidate that would appeal to the base, right? Like, he wanted to run this like straight maverick moderate campaign, select a Democrat as his running mate, kind of like the no labels dream before there was a no labels. And he got talked out of it, right? He spent like a day, a couple of hours with Sarah Palin. And he was like, all right, sure. Yeah. The Alaska lady. And she turned out to be a political disaster nationally, but clearly the party has been remade in her image. Right? I mean, if you remember back to her convention speech in 2008, when she kind of introduced herself to the country, the style of that speech, right, which was like vindictive and cruel and dismissive. That's where she debuted the idea of a real America, right? The idea that the rest of us that live in cities aren't real. I guess we're figments of her imagination or something. And you know, all this like, you know, Main Street politics, small town values stuff really got turbocharged under her. I mean, Trump obviously made it even nastier than she did. But in a very real way, the selection of Palin put the Republican Party on a very different trajectory. It didn't happen immediately. Obviously, they nominated Romney in 2012, but like the people that Romney beat were like pre-MAGA candidates, right? They prefigure today's politics, like Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum. These like people who combine religious zealotry with deep contempt for liberal democracy and hostility to racial and ethnic and gender minorities. Yeah, who can forget Rick Santorum's famous, they were asking him about welfare and he was like, yeah, it's just the blah people. Like he was just going to say black people, but he said blah people.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, yeah. I didn't mean black people. I meant blah. I really did. I meant blah people. You know, blah people, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's a different party out there, Ben. And it's like, yeah, the party that we have to contend with probably for the rest of my life is this magnified extremist party. I think is only chance of getting the Republican Party away from these people is to deal them a really systematic across the board defeat that we simply seem incapable of doing right now. I think it's largely because our leadership is sclerotic and ancient and like incapable of pivoting to a winning message and winning policies. That's not to say I think Biden has been a bad president. I don't, but I think he's the wrong person for the moment. And I think the fact that he's in that position explains a lot of our troubles right now. But you also have to give credit to the right wing kind of narrative building media universe because they are just incredible at what they do. I mean, they really are. And they are, I just wish the Democrats could figure out how to do this, but they'll seize on a local story as evidence of this big structural thing, like the nursing student who was murdered in Georgia by a Venezuelan immigrant, you know, a tragic story, right? But like they have like unapologetically turned it into this like national story about how like immigrants are demons. And that's the context that Biden has to deal with. And they won't deal with him, right? Like unlike Democrats, Republicans are like, wait, is this not in our political interest? No, we're not going to do that. Do you remember when Democrats passed the NAFTA revision the day after they impeached Trump? Do you remember this? This was in 2019. They impeached Trump one day, and the next day they were like, sure, we'll pass your USMCA. That sounds great.
Yeah, man.
Right heading into the election year. And I was like, guys, what are you doing? Don't give them the W here. But they don't care. You know, like they... Actually, it was something more important than that. I'd have been like, fine, that's the right thing to do. But Democrats are willing to give their Republican presidents like not just like minor, but like major, major victories on the precipice of an election that Republicans simply will not do. They were not going to sign this border deal. And that border deal was like a very dramatic capitulation by Democrats on this issue, right? That out of which we would have gotten almost nothing other than the election year narrative. And still, like almost every Democrat in the country was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Well,
okay. So that's the point. And I just have to make this political point. Yes, we had an election year narrative, but it would have done absolutely nothing to substantially change the issue that's causing immigration into our country. And so that's the madness and lunacy. I had a conversation with a political journalist. He's now a regular on the show, Steve Kraft from Arizona, David. And we were talking about Arizonans' attitude toward immigration. I may have mentioned this to you before, and how schizo it is. Like they're all this is a huge crisis. We must build a wall. This is the prevailing narrative in Arizona, like in Chicago and everywhere. At the same time, immigrants who are not here, who are here without the proper documentation, are mowing lawns, working in restaurants, holding up the economy. It's like we know that's the case, but we're going to, this is our election narrative. We're not moving from it. So we have issues and challenges in this country, but largely because of the Republican propaganda machine, we're incapable of addressing them. And you could go across the board, any issue, climate change, immigration, inequities, go across the board, any issue of the day. There's a Republican narrative that is just completely fictitious. And the Democrats, because they can't conquer it at the ballot box, have to pretend as though it's a legitimate narrative. And we're in this box. And I don't even know if I can blame Joe Biden. I'll give you an example. I mean, this is part of it is the media. I'm watching here in Illinois, Mike Bost versus Darren Bailey, a MAGA election primary for Congress, okay? and the media is presenting Boss as a moderate. I'm like, you guys are as big a part of the problem. This is the mainstream media, not the Fox media. Well, the Boss is the more moderate in the race. They're both MAGA lunatics, David. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even get the words out. Go ahead. Yeah.
I think one problem is that it's not just that our side doesn't have this well-oiled machine, right? It's that at the top of the hierarchy, we don't have someone who's willing to make affirmative cases for our position on some important matters. Okay. And so, like, I have multiple critiques of Biden on immigration, right? But, like, I think the most important one is that he refuses to make an affirmative case for his own administration's policies, right? And that's a problem because all people hear is this migrant hysteria. You know, like the migrants are coming and it's terrible and they killed this person and they're going to kill your kids and they're going to do this and that. And you have very clear economic data that's like, actually, our immigration system is like a huge economic benefit. It's kind of like America's superpower, right? The fact that God knows why, but people still want to come here. And we derive enormous long run economic benefits from it. Maybe even short run economic benefits. I saw a New York Times article today. It was like, maybe all the jobs are, maybe the job growth is partly because of immigrants. Maybe we haven't fallen into a recession partly because of immigrants. And it's like, I'll fall over dead if I ever hear that coming out of Biden's mouth, right? Because all Biden ever talks about is border security. All Biden ever, all people know is that we're against a wall, but they don't actually know what we're for. You know, it, like the caricature there, and there we're allowing ourselves to be caricatured is like that we all favor open borders or whatever. And the reality is we do not have a credible figure out there talking about why we should take Venezuelans in, right? Like what's happening in Venezuela? Why is it important to us? What role did we play in it? How do these large migrations benefit America? How do you think we got all these Cubans here, right? The Mariella boat lift, right? And in the past, right? Like this is like a layup, right? You have like to the vast mainstream of America, the government running Venezuela is like this like ideologically extreme hostile country, right? And we used to have a thing here where we welcomed people who wanted to come to the United States from regimes run by tyrants. And we are allowing ourselves to be outflanked on this issue because President Biden and his top advisors and the people running the Democratic Party are afraid of their own policies. You know what I mean? And it's like, we did these things for, like, there are large numbers of Venezuelans here because of a policy choice that we made, right? And yes, there would be certain numbers here anyway, right? But like, we made a decision, right, that led to even more coming, right? And all we're doing to defend that policy is just like leaving it out in the air for Republicans to beat up like a pinata without advancing any kind of coherent defense of what we're doing. And that's a losing position, right? If you're just like, we're in this big argument and I'm just going to walk away from the debate stage, well, you're going to lose the debate.
Agreed. And just like, so Biden's border policy, which was essentially Republican border policy, which he was offering to sort of dilute the impact of the Fox propaganda machine that he's facing in the reelection campaign. And the Republicans said, oh, no, we see what you're doing. You're just giving us what we claim we want. No, we don't want that. We want to be able to say, continue the propaganda. So we're not going to give you that victory. It's absurd. Because it doesn't do any, it wouldn't change us, the situation at the border. It wouldn't help Chicago or other cities resettle immigrants. It would do absolutely nothing except, like, what? Put in cement the Republican policy toward immigration, which is a losing policy for absolutely everybody involved, except for maybe like people who want to work as guards at detention camps. So you're right. You're up. Look at Chicago. Look at the town that you have decided to live in. God help you. your city, a supposedly lefty city. They're like, they don't know what to do. They don't want to mention Venezuelans. you know, they want to pretend like the thing doesn't exist. Let's talk about the Democratic Convention. Let's talk about the Bears Stadium and the Sox Stadium. Don't talk about my. It could be like a boon for. It is a boon for. You know, the public school population's up for the first time, you know? But we'll talk about it, Ben. Let's kick them out of the temporary shelters we have because they're overflowing. I'm going to show them tough on immigrants. I'm like, man, you Chicago, you're pathetic. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct. They won. They won. MAGA propaganda has won on that issue. And I don't know. You're right. Biden is a – you would need a more dynamic figure who would just confront – I haven't seen anybody, David, in American politics who confronts the Republican propaganda machine on immigration. Do you know of any candidate? I'm not talking about third party candidate. I'm talking about a mainstream on the ballot Democrat who has confronted the propaganda machine of immigration, the Republicans. Can you name one?
Not really. No. Not a prominent national figure. I mean, there were some interesting. There were some interesting debates in 2019, if you remember back to the early Democratic debates.
Oh, my God, yeah. When they raised a hand, who's for health care for immigrants? Remember those days?
Right, yeah. Right. And you had people like, can I just get them mixed up? I think it was Julian Castro was making an affirmative case for immigrants and a case for demilitarizing the border and this and that. But yeah, I mean, none of the leading Democrats right now will touch this stuff because they're running scared from it. Like, they look at polls and they're like, well, people don't like our immigration policy. And I'm like, people don't like your immigration policy. A, you're not defending it. And B, you're not funding it. Right. So it's like Chicagoans are not hostile to immigrants. Right. Like, we're hostile to solving a national problem without national resources. Right. And that's where Biden comes in. It's like, I support this policy. Right. I think we should naturalize all 700,000 of these people. Right. And invite more. But you can't do that for free. Right. And you can't ask municipalities to shoulder the burden by themselves. And Biden needs to use some of these emergency powers that he has. There's this thing called the National Emergencies Act. This is what Trump used to build the wall in 2019. And we all hooted and hollered. We're like, that's outrageous. But it's just because we didn't like the wall. Go read the National Emergencies Act. It is the most broadly written statute I've ever written in my entire life. I've ever read my entire life. It basically allows the president just like kind of declare an emergency and Congress can try to claw it back. But the president can veto. So it's like the Congress can terminate a national emergency with a joint resolution, but the president can veto it, which is exactly what Trump did. And he could declare a national emergency on the southern border and just like take piles of cash from the military and build housing and build resources for people. That's what we actually need right now. We don't need to deport people. We need to properly care for them and be able to like competently and humanely integrate them into the places where they've chosen to go and the places that have accepted them. But, you know, I like strike me dead if I hear that coming out of the mouth of Joe
Biden. No, you won't hear it. And you know, I've been saying this for the entire first year of Brandon Johnson's regime. He put Black Chicagoans to work building housing for Venezuelan immigrants or migrants and also returning Black people would boot it out of Chicago and have the feds pay for it. There's the winning strategy. Some old lunatic lefty in his attic can come up with it, but no, can't do it. And so now you got Trump's making inroads with Black residents who are upset over my immigration. I'm like, man, you Democrats, you're so afraid of your shadow. It's just unbelievable. So I hear you, man. It's very frustrating to be a Democrat, but the alternative, good God, I'm sorry. The alternative is freaking fascism.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. Sorry. Not going there. And I'm not going to, I guess we can hold off for another time, the No Labels Party, and their demise. We talked about Baby Bobby last show. I urge everybody, if you missed that one, check out Baby Bobby. We talked about the third party candidacy of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. No Labels died. The party died. I guess did it. I don't know if it ever made it on the ballot. This was the quote unquote moderates of the world. Somehow or other, Joe Biden is no longer a moderate. Coming together to elect a more moderate than the guy who's already in office. More madness from America. And Joe Manchin was at the, for a while considering running on that ticket, if you recall, David. So I'm happy to see that they're officially done. I mean, I don't know who would waste their vote as for no label candidate, but your thoughts on the life and death of the no label party.
Okay, bear with me for a second. Have you ever seen Star Trek V? All right. It's the one where they search for God. Okay. And there's a scene.
No, I didn't see that one. Go ahead.
It's by its bottom tier, but it's whatever. I'll watch Star Trek if it's the worst thing in the world. So there's a scene where this being that they think is God tries to like commandeer the Enterprise from them. Right. And at one point, James Kirk stands and he's looking at the entity and he's like, what does God need with a starship? Right. And I have the same question. They're like, the whole no labels thing was like, we want a moderate party. And I'm like, you already have one, you know? Like, it's called the Democratic Party. It's run by a literal moderate who's been in the Senate since 1972. Okay. Like, if we had sat down and charted out the path to a moderate party leader in 2019, like, we couldn't have done it any better. I mean, like, I'm not saying that this was my choice, okay? But like, Joe Biden was the moderate consensus, you know, pick for the Democratic Party because they didn't want to lose the 2020 election, and we thought we needed a white moderate dude to lead the party. And I just don't know who in the party we could pick to lead us that would head off this nonsense from the no labels people about how we've run off too far to the left. I think the reason that they were not able to get this done is because candidate after candidate after candidate who was thinking about it came in, looked at the polls, and was like, so I'll be helping to elect Donald Trump? No, thank you. And they could not get anyone of stature to accept the nomination. I talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago when I was like, look, this is an effort. It doesn't have any ideological core or any other appeal. And if they cannot find a Larry Hogan or Joe Manchin or somebody that's already prominent to take the deal, it's not going to work. And when you try to form a third party that occupies the same ideological space as a party that already exists, that's not a winning strategy, and it never was. But I am really glad. I mean, in all honesty, I'm really glad that they decided to fold it up, because even if they had run some clown who just like they pulled off the street and they got 1%. That could have been the 1% that broke us. So it's good. It's good that they're not running a candidate for sure.
Yeah, it's good. It's good for the fight against fascism that they're not running a candidate. And I still maintain that baby Bobby will take more votes from Trump than Biden. I'm going down with that one, that prediction, David.
I think you're right. Honestly, in the end, I think you're going to be right about that.
I think I'm, yeah. Those are people who can't quite bring themselves to vote for Trump. So they'll vote, but they don't want to, they can't vote for Biden, so they'll vote for baby Bobby, or they're just lunatics.
Right.
Who wouldn't vote for baby Bobby? I mean, wouldn't vote for Biden anyway. All right, so we'll close with Nebraska. And this is a theme of mine, but David as well. David wrote a whole book about this, about how Republicans play the political game versus the way Democrats play the political game. And I saw this and I thought of you. So this has to do with the Electoral College. And my thesis has always been that if Republicans had lost in 2000, the way Gore lost, where they won the popular vote, but lost the Electoral College, we would already be 24 years into getting rid of the Electoral College, because Republicans don't play. They play to win. Democrats are freaking clueless, never once made that an issue. They've now lost two presidential elections, even though they won the popular vote, and yet they cling to the Electoral College, afraid of their shadows. It's everything like adding more members to the Supreme Court, getting rid of the filibuster. The list goes on and on, how Democrats are absolutely just clueless is the only word I could use about how to play the game of politics and win. David Ferris wrote a whole book about this. So now in Nebraska, have you been following what's been going on, Republicans? So why don't you just take it away? This is a curveball to you right down over the plate. Go ahead, David.
All right. Well, thank you for telling me what pitch you're going to throw. Appreciate that. It's a fastball. What's going on is that Nebraska is one of two states that divides their electoral votes by congressional district in addition to a statewide winner. So Illinois, right, we have 19 electoral votes, right? That's your 17 House districts plus your two senators. And the winner of the state, even if that's with 35%, gets all 19 of those votes, okay? There's two states that don't do it that way. One is Maine. So Maine has the two votes go to the statewide winner, and then they have two congressional districts, right? And so the other two electoral votes go to the winner of that congressional district. You know, the presidential candidate who wins that district. Does that make sense? And so Republicans have, for I think at least two cycles in a row, have won an electoral vote in Maine because they win this one deep red congressional district there. And Democrats win one of the three congressional districts in Nebraska. They won it in 2020. Let me see, did they win it in 2016? No, they didn't. But they did in 2020. So what Republicans are trying to do is to change the way that Nebraska conducts its federal elections. Republicans hold the state legislature. They have the governorship. Big shock, right? And so what they're doing is this like extremely hardball, straightforward maneuver where they're going to award the state's electoral votes to the statewide winner only and get rid of the system where they divide the votes by congressional district. And that takes one electoral vote away from a Democratic candidate. It's very simple. Right now, there are 538 electoral votes to be won, right? One is not the end of the world. However, there are a number of close election scenarios where taking this electoral vote out of Nebraska could either drop us from a two-vote win into a tie or drop us from a tie into a two-vote loss. And they know that, right? They know that. And for some reason, the Maine Democrats are just not budging on this. Because the natural move here, right, would be like Nebraska goes back to the statewide winner, right? And then we run the show in Maine, and then Maine goes back to a statewide winner. But we're like, no, that wouldn't be fair. It's just how like, how like all the states that have passed nonpartisan redistricting in the United States are Democratic states like California, New York. And we're like, all right, so Republicans, you guys can do this too, right? Nonpartisan redistricting, we can all do this. They're like, no, we're gonna gerrymander the hell out of every state that we run. What's wrong with you guys? And so that's where I'm like, good on you, Illinois Democrats. You're playing hardball, like refusing to get on board with this. Like you can only do this nationally. Okay, you cannot do this in a piecemeal fashion. And so it's the same thing. Like if Republicans do this in Nebraska, we have to put enormous pressure on Maine Democrats to do the same thing there. And if they can't do that, I just, send him a copy of my book, I guess, but it's really, really maddening.
Has it absolutely passed in Nebraska? I lost track of it.
Actually think that the bill is in trouble.
It's in trouble. Okay.
For whatever reason. So, it's just something to keep your eye on. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. I saw the article about it as a potential. And I said, I have to talk to David Ferris about this. This is just so classic.
Yeah, it looks like they're not going to do it, honestly. So it's the governor wanted to do it, but the state legislature doesn't want to do it. They put it up for a vote yesterday, I think a procedural vote, and it got clobbered. I don't know. I guess there's still some people with a conscience out there. I don't know. But I mean, the whole thing makes no sense anyway, right? It's like, can we have the same election in all 50 states or not? Like, we already use this ridiculous system to elect the president. Can it at least be the same in every state? Christ's sake.
No. Hey, listen, it's the same. We'll close with this. You got to laugh to keep from crying. This is the same system that declares people who live in Washington. I'm laughing here. They don't get... They don't get senators.
They
don't exist. Yeah.
The first time I teach my students about the Electoral College, it's like when you tell your kid there's no Santa Claus. You know, they're like, wait. Like adults are just idiots. Then, like, I don't understand. How can this possibly be the system that we use?
Well, it was set up to preserve slavery. Let's, can we get that straight? And it survived. And I mean, there was a moment. Oh my God, there was a moment during the Nixon years where it looked like it might be abolished before you were born, David. So, and it was the Democrats. Oh, God help us all.
Oh my God.
Southern Democrats. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, we should do a whole show because there is an effort, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact thing. Do you know about this?
I will do a show on this. Yes, go ahead.
As we get closer to the election, we should just do a whole thing about this.
We'll do a show on electoral college.
It's going to be on everybody's minds for sure.
Yeah, because once again, we're going to be at it. America, every 4 years, America puts its mind on this. Like, wait a minute.
Incredible.
All right, David, I'm going to let you go. This show is Madness in America, and I think we pretty much covered the map.
I think we did. That's very thorough.
So, very good. I feel a little saner. Thank you very much, David.
All right, thanks for having me, Ben. I'll see you next time.
All right, that's David Ferris. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.